back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
Welcome back. Recently, I represented the seller in the sale of a piece of real estate. And in that process, we had a contract for the purchase, which the buyers decided that they would nullify during one of the contingencies. In fact, they attempted to nullify that after they'd already passed the contingency deadline on the home inspection. They missed the deadline. And as a result, the seller wanted the deposit that the buyers had put up. I've invited Bobby Lee into the show to discuss from his perspective, having been in the real estate business for many years. Bobby Lee is with Sage Title, which Sage is a part of the RGS family that services the entire Metroplex for real estate sales as well as real estate advice. Bobby, glad to have you back on the show.
Eric, good afternoon. I'm glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
All right. And Bobby, you've heard my brief introduction here. I'd like you to tag on that and tell us a story and some of the ways that buyers can lose their earnest money deposit and how they can avoid that.
Well, the truth of the matter is the buyers have an enormous amount of leverage when a settlement fails to occur. And that's true whether they defaulted, whether they voided the settlement died because of, by operation of the contract, for example, they maybe voided it upon completion of a home inspection, or by operation of law, maybe they voided the contract after reviewing condominium docs or something like that. Too often, Eric, many of these sellers out there think that when a contract, if the buyer were to default under a purchase contract for real property, that the seller can simply take the buyer's deposit. And that is not really true. The reality is, irrespective of the circumstances on how the contract were to die, so to speak, and that would include a buyer default, the buyer still has to, in writing, release the deposit to the seller.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of sellers don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, to add insult to injury, without the release, even if the buyer defaulted, the buyer hasn't relinquished his or her equitable rights under contract in that property. And what that means for the seller is that if the seller would have put the house back on the market, which they can do,
mm-hmm.
they have to disclose to everyone in the world that the property is subject to a pending release.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go under contract with another subsequent buyer, but it still remains subject to that pending release from the first buyer. And what happens is, without that release, if the parties were to attempt to go to settlement with the second buyer,
mm-hmm.
the title company during the settlement wouldn't do the settlement. They won't insure that title, because by insuring that title, they've committed themselves to defending any potential claims of that first buyer, even if the first buyer were to have defaulted, and even if the under merits, under law, under contract, whatever the case, the buyer were in the wrong, that title company that was contracted to conduct settlement for the second buyer, the subsequent buyer, they're not going to conduct that settlement because they don't want to extend, they don't want to be exposed to that liability.
Right. Now, the liability, that's really the key here, is that when you go to contract and the buyer and the seller agree to an earnest money deposit, and since the buyer is saying, I'm in earnest, I will purchase your property, I had a case where a buyer put up $25,000 for the purchase of one of my listings in McLean, Virginia. This is 2.5 years ago. And it was the first instance in my entire career where the deposit was actually forfeited by the purchaser because he committed fraud.
Wow.
And the fraud in this was that he reported on his financial information sheet $50,000 or $75,000 in money in the bank that wasn't in fact in the bank. It was money in receivables for his business that he expected to receive, but he didn't receive it. So he reported an untruth, signed the document, and as a result, I claimed from my seller that $25,000 was just the start of what my seller was going to pursue for the fraud, and the buyer released that $25,000. The whole of it went to the seller, and we put the property back up on the market free and clear with the releases signed and sold it immediately to another purchaser. It is difficult for a seller to understand that even if you get a $100,000 deposit, it can be held up until you go to court to get that money released if the buyer wants to hold their feet. And if you want to sell your house, you have to make the hard decision of, do I pursue that and have the clout on my title and not be able to sell my property? And if there's enough money at stake, then clearly you don't mind that. And if you're not in such a hurry where time is less important than the money to you, you'll take the time to pursue that. I was mentioned at the beginning of the segment, there was a $10,000 earnest money deposit. My client was negotiated with the buyers to get $5,000 from the buyers to release the contract. We got $5,000 for the seller because the buyer backed out of the contract after the deadline. The buyer felt the spanking, you know, from losing their $5,000, and the seller got some compensation for the loss of time with the house having been off the market for a couple of weeks, and you know, all ended that way. And now the property's back up on the market. In fact, I just got another offer on that property. So I think we're going to see more of this, people making this decision to back out and not understanding. So thanks for the explanation.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, in both instances you spoke of, your sellers, and you did a tremendous job for sellers because they're very fortunate to get anything at all. Sometimes when sellers lawyer up and they go hire a lawyer saying, yeah, the buyer defaulted, if they don't have an experienced lawyer that truly understands real estate litigation as opposed to just litigation, these litigation attorneys typically just look at the merits under contract, under law, or whatever, under the facts or whatever, and they said, we're going to win in court, okay? But the problem is not whether you win or lose in court. The problem is for the title company who's been engaged to do the settlement for the subsequent buyer, for that title company, they're not interested in going to court and winning, because by going to court and winning, the amount of money they would have, if they insure that title, they're then obligated to defend any claims, irrespective of the merits, the underlying merits of the claim. And even if they were to win 100 times out of 100, they, from a purely economic, you know, cost-benefit analysis, they would have lost money on that transaction. As a result, the title companies are going to decline to insure that title, and under contract, the seller must deliver not only marketable title, meaning that they own the property, but also insurable title, meaning that a buyer would be able to get title insurance on it. And without that release signed by that original buyer, even if that buyer were to have defaulted, that title is rendered non-insurable.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bobby, I apologize. We're about out of time. I'd like to invite our listeners, if anybody has a question for you about this or anything else having to do with real estate, to contact you. What is the best means for them to get in touch with you?
Sure. It's my email is probably the best way. BOBBY@sagetitlegroup.com. Now, we don't represent people ever. We limit our practice to conducting real estate settlements. But certainly if you're ever in a jam and you need to find a lawyer to represent you, I can refer you to a lawyer to, you know, represent, you know, your interests if it goes that far.
Bobby Lee from Sage Title, a part of the RGS family of real estate settlement companies. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Bobby. Coming up, final thoughts, 7.9 acres of historic and buildable land right on Leesburg Pike near Colvin Run.